Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I gotta say, I'm very grateful. First of all, I love Unity. My wife, Wendy, and I have only recently discovered Unity, maybe about 7 or 8 months ago in El Paso, Texas. And I just want to say, where have you been all my life? You're amazing people. I feel so at home. I feel like I've come home with Unity. I'm also grateful that Gordon mentioned that the workshop tonight on celebrating the beautiful uncertainty of everything will not last 3 hours.
Thank you.
It'll just feel like it. No, I'm kidding. No, it'll be a lot of fun. Trust me. It'll be great. I want to talk about this morning the what I call the quantum sayings of Jesus from the Lost Gospel of Thomas. And it's just been a really amazing... Whoop. Is everything okay? Okay. It's just been an amazing catalyst in my own life. It's shifted my paradigms a lot. In fact, the very first time that I read the Gospel of Thomas, this was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I thought it was nonsense. I was like, this is gobbledygook. I made it halfway through, and I thought, oh, who could take this seriously? It makes no sense. But then, about 3 years ago, someone mailed me, out of the blue, a copy of this book about the Gospel of Thomas. I was getting ready to fly the next day, so I just stuck it in my bag. I read it on the plane, and then really in the first 10 pages of this book, it explained to me why it made no sense to me the first time I read it, because the author said, to understand the Gospel of Thomas, you have to read it through this lens of non-duality. That everything Jesus is saying in the Gospel of Thomas is something about our shared divinity and our shared humanity, that there's no separation. So at first I was skeptical, but then when I went back and started reading it, through that lens I realized, oh my gosh, he's right. And then that, the more I studied it, it just opened up so much for me about the Gospel of Thomas. So I want to talk to you this morning about the Gospel of Thomas. It was 1945. Two men were desperately digging, searching for lost treasure in the hot desert sands of Egypt, hoping to find something valuable to help them care for their mother while they were in prison, because less than 24 hours ago, they had chased and killed the man responsible for their father's death in that same Egyptian desert. Suddenly, as they were digging, their shovels hit something solid. They quickly shifted to digging with their hands, and what they found was a large, 4-foot-tall sarcophagus. No, it was a jar, sealed and still intact. At first, the man and his younger brother were too afraid to open it. What if it's a genie? What if it's cursed? And finally, one of them said, but what if it's gold? So taking a deep breath, summoning all their courage, the older man raised his shovel and broke the seal at the top of the jar. And they did not know it at the time, but what they found that day was the greatest archaeological time capsule of lost ancient texts ever uncovered. The place was Nag Hammadi, Egypt. The treasure contained, among many other texts, the Lost Gospel of Thomas. And the man with the shovel's name was Muhammad Ali. No kidding, not the boxer, obviously. But that really was his name. And the Gospel of Thomas is just one of the lost texts that were discovered by Muhammad and his brother in that cave in 1945. Included in that time capsule was also other texts that we had only heard about but had no copies of. The Gospel of Truth, a book called Thunder, Perfect Mind, the Apocrypha of John, and over 30 other lost ancient texts. Before that miraculous discovery, we had only fragments of the Gospel of Thomas from quotations by early church fathers over the centuries to prove that such a thing even existed, that it was real. But once the text was discovered, translated into English in 1950, published in 1975 in a book that people could actually read it, the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas, finally came into focus. So let me clear up a few misconceptions about Thomas before I go a little deeper. I have to tell you two things it is not. It is not a Gnostic text. And most scholars would agree with this. Gnosticism is more closely identified with what we call Sethian Gnosticism, and some of it can get kind of wonky. The Gospel of Thomas doesn't go there. It doesn't talk about some other demiurge God that created the earth, the planet Earth, and didn't know he wasn't God, and didn't know there was another God, and it doesn't talk about archons and all these kind of hierarchies of angels and a lot of other weird stuff. Thomas isn't like that, doesn't mention any of that stuff, okay? So it's really not included in what we would call actual Gnosticism. That also would include, along with Thomas not being a Gnostic text, would also be the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Truth, and things like that. I don't want to get too deep in that right now, but just want to set that straight. And the other thing about Thomas is it's the Gospel of Thomas is it's not really a gospel. When we think of gospels, right, in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, those gospels typically have a story, right? There's a birth narrative, there's Jesus calling the disciples, there's the ministry, there's the miracles, there's the arrest, the crucifixion, the resurrection, and then something about him coming back, right? That is what most gospels that we have in the New Testament, that's what they contain. Thomas never mentions a word of any of that. There is nothing about the birth of Jesus, the life of Jesus, the miracles of Jesus, the crucifixion, the resurrection, the second coming, nothing. So, what is it, right? What is the Gospel of Thomas if it's none of those things? The Gospel of Thomas is essentially a collection of the sayings of Jesus. There are 114 sayings total, okay? So it's like saying one, and Jesus said. Saying two, Jesus said. Saying three, the disciples asked, and Jesus said. That's it. Out of those 114 sayings, half of those sayings appear in the Gospels we already have in the New Testament. The other half are brand new. So without this discovery, we wouldn't even know that these sayings even existed. So real quickly, how did it get buried in the first place? Why was it suppressed, etc.? Why isn't it in our Bibles today? People usually ask. That's a very long story. I'm going to condense it for you pretty briefly. There were early Christians who we call kind of the proto-Orthodox, Irenaeus, Tertullian. We kind of call them sometimes the church fathers, the Orthodox church fathers. What we are learning is that there was not one Christianity in the first century, second century. There were pluralities of Christianity. There were Christianities, plural, meaning there were many, many, many different groups of people who all believe slightly different things about Jesus, and if you ask them, they would say, I'm a Christian, okay? What we know is that later on, those people that we are now calling the church fathers, like Irenaeus, Tertullian, and those guys, they were just one narrow sect who sort of, in the end, won the day. They outlasted everybody else. But even during that time, they had tension, right, with these other groups of Christians that they disagreed with. And one of those groups of Christians were the followers of a guy named Valentinus. Valentinus, and we only know this from them, their opponents tell us basically everything we know about Valentinus. And Valentinus was the disciple of a guy named Theotus, who was the disciple of a guy named Paul. So all the things that Valentinus talked about and his followers believed in were very much in line with what we read in the Gospel of Thomas and Truth and all these other Valentinian texts, not Gnostic texts, but Valentinian texts. And they're all speaking about our oneness and our connection with God and with one another. So you can see that that's why they didn't like those, what they were talking about, and that they were representing themselves as followers of Jesus and Christians when they're not Christians, I am. And this tension continued until around 340 AD, when, you might know the story, Constantine shows up and he gives authority and power to the Irenaeus kind of, you know, Tertullian strain of Christians, because they'll play ball with him. And he gives them the authority of the Roman Empire. And one of the church fathers, his name is Athanasius. And he writes a famous letter. It's called the Easter Letter. And he writes this letter. It goes out to all of the churches, all the seminaries, all the Christian schools in the region. And essentially tells them, under the authority of the emperor, you will no longer teach from or use these texts in your sermons and homilies and services. And one of those texts was the Gospel of Thomas. And, by the way, all the other texts that are found hidden in this jar. So this is the reason why we think that they were lost for so long. Because most of the churches were like, well, we got to burn this and shred it and destroy it. And some creative soul, God bless them, in Nag Hammadi, Egypt, instead of burning them and destroying them, decided to seal them up in a giant jar and bury it in the sand where it sat for over 1,000 years until Muhammad Ali and his brother dug it up. And we're very grateful for that find. So what is the big deal? Why is the Gospel of Thomas so important today? I believe, and this is not hyperbole, I genuinely believe that it contains the answer to the biggest problem that we are facing today. We are more divided in our world than ever before. I don't know about you, I can feel it. Every single day I wake up, if you're on social media, if you're watching, you know, the news stations, everything, all the messages are us and them and us and them in every way, constantly trying to divide us politically, religiously, socially, everywhere we turn, all day long, are all examples of convincing us how divided and separate we are. And so what we see is war, genocide, protests, violence, political fear-mongering, all of it us versus them. It's inescapable. Christians versus atheists, Democrats versus Republicans, Jews against Muslims, men against women, families even turning against one another. And so we can feel this in our bodies, and we feel pulled apart and turned against our fellow man every single day. But what if that is not reality? What if the truth is we're more connected than anybody wants us to believe? Now, our senses tell us, right, that we're all separate. I'm over here, you're over there, right? This is a music stand, that's a piano. These things are all separate things. They're not the same thing. You're me, you're you, and I'm me, right? And we are not these, we're not each other. Everything the way we perceive the world through our senses, everything we see and taste and touch and feel reinforces this idea of separation. It's kind of the illusion we're born into. What I find so fascinating, this is where the quantum part comes in. Quantum physicists are now learning that this idea of separation is not reality. The way we perceive reality this way is not correct. So things seem to be separate, but the truth is the reality is every person, every object, every molecule and atom in the universe is an expression of what they would call the quantum field. So some of them say the quantum field is everything, and everything is the quantum field. So even though you and I appear to be separate and distinct from one another and everything else, the truth is we are all expressions of this one quantum field. And you could say quantum field, you could say consciousness, you could say Christ, right? Fill in the blank. So here's what's very fascinating about that shift. For the very longest time, scientists were primarily materialists, right? They would say that reality is defined by what we can see and measure, right? So atoms and molecules and stuff. That's the universe, that's all there is. And so there was a denial of human consciousness and the spirit, right? Anything outside of what they could measure. And so that's always been the pushback for the longest time. Theologians and philosophers have said, okay, scientists, if that's true, if reality is just atoms and physical matter and stuff that we can measure, can you explain human consciousness? How did human consciousness arise from matter? And why is human consciousness only arising in humans and not bananas or giraffes or hamsters, right? Can you explain? Of course they can't, right? There was no answer to that question. For the longest time, this was the back and forth debate. Until quantum physics began to suggest something really fascinating, that atoms and molecules also had consciousness. And this discovery has led quantum physicists like Sir James Jean, who is one of the leading quantum physicists alive, to write at the conclusion of an article he wrote in Nature, the journal Nature. He said this: we can no longer think of the universe in terms of a great machine, materialism, but instead we must describe the universe as a great thought, consciousness. So it turns out we've been asking the wrong question this whole time. We've been asking the scientists to explain to us, how does human consciousness arise from matter? And the real question should be, how does matter arise from human consciousness? Or just consciousness in general, right? So this is the reality. And it's so exciting to see quantum physics catching up with people like Jesus and other mystics that have been saying something very similar for a very, very long time. I want to read to you what I think is one of the most pivotal sayings from the Gospel of Thomas. It says, Jesus saw some infants who were being suckled, and he said to his disciples, "These infants being suckled are like those who enter the kingdom." And the disciples, of course, mostly being clueless, said, "Oh, should we become like infants to enter the kingdom?" It's like a little comedy routine. Jesus says to them, this is significant. When you make the two one, when you make the inside as the outside and the outside as the inside and the upper as the lower, when you make the male and the female into a single one, so that the male is not male and the female is not female, then you shall enter, or then you can see, the kingdom. In other words, these ideas of separation, inside, outside, right? Upper, lower, male, female. These are things we perceive, but that's not reality. The reality is that we are really all connected. And by the way, I was raised Southern Baptist, and in my back. By the way, if any recovering Southern Baptist here, my condolences, God bless you. Welcome. Talking like this can make people like us sometimes very nervous, like, oh, I don't know, that sounds kind of New Agey or something. But what it's not. Here's the thing. This kind of language, Jesus says this kind of stuff all the time. The Apostle Paul says this kind of stuff all the time. If you think of it this way, before there were any Gospels, before Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, the earliest Christian writings that we have any copies of are the writings of Paul. And one of Paul's very first letters, it might be the first letter he ever wrote, was to the church in Galatia. And I think, again, if you can just put yourself in that position, it's the first century, you're trying to follow this Jesus guy, this apostle guy, Paul shows up, he wrote you a letter, and someone stands up in the church and reads this letter out loud to all of you. And in that letter, one of the first, anything we have copies of anything Christian in any Christian literature, contained in that letter of the epistle to the Galatians, Paul says something that is either the most mind-blowing and astounding thing anyone has ever heard, or the most common thing that they've all heard 100 times and they're like, yeah, we get it. But it's one or the other. And here's what he says to the church in Galatia. He says, in Christ, there is no male or female, Jew or Gentile, slave or free, gay or straight. I added that last part. But you get it, right? You get it. What he's saying, and then he ends it by saying, because in Christ we are all one. What an astounding thing. One of the first things we have in the Christian faith is a statement like that. A statement of incredible oneness in the Christ for all of us that eliminates all of these perceived us and them separations. And it's really amazing. And so I think this is why it's so important for us to understand this. Because when we realize how connected we are to the divine and fully accepted and loved by God, and how if I'm completely connected with the divine, so are you. Which means I am connected to you and you are connected to me. And that is the message I think we need. That I say it's the answer to everything. Because if we really get it, if human consciousness can reach the point that we don't just hear and nod our heads and go, okay, yeah, that's nice. But we wake up every day living our lives knowing and believing in the depth of our being, I am fully connected to God and I am fully connected to you and everyone else that I see. This is how you can love your neighbor as yourself. Because when you look at your neighbor, you don't see another person, you see the Christ in them. This is how you can love your enemies, right? Because when you see your enemy, you don't see that other person. You see reflected back your own humanity, and you see reflected back the light of Christ in that person. If we get this, this is the end of poverty, of war, of genocide, of all of this us and them thinking. It really is what changes everything. And so I believe The message of Jesus uncovered in the Lost Gospel of Thomas, it isn't foreign to the scriptures, as I said, but it is, for many people, somewhat scandalous. This idea that we're all connected, it challenges everything that we see around us. But again, Jesus repeats this 114 times in the Gospel of Thomas. It's a message that's been buried for over 1,000 years. But by the way, it's always been available in the wisdom of the mystics from many different faiths. Buddhists, Hindus, Sufis, Black Elk, who I love, Native American. They are all kind of saying the same thing. If you don't believe me, let me give you a couple of quotes. Buddha says, "He who experiences the unity of life sees his own self in all beings." Black Elk, who I mentioned, says, "Peace will come to the hearts of men when they realize their oneness with the universe. It is everywhere." Julian of Norwich says, "We are not just made by God, we are made of God." Teresa of Avila says, "Christ has no body now but yours." Rumi says, "Everything in the universe is within you. Ask all from yourselves." The Bhagavad Gita says, "He lives in wisdom who sees himself in all and all in himself." And Gandhi said, "I believe in the absolute oneness of God and therefore also of humanity. What though we have many bodies? We have one soul." And one of my favorite mystics of all time said this: "The human being is part of the whole, called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion, to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in all of its beauty." That was Albert Einstein. And this, my friends, is why I call this wisdom of Jesus from the Quantum Gospel of Thomas the answer to everything. I really do believe if we can wake up and see this, it will change us, and it has the power to change the world around us. And right now, it gives me a lot of hope, and I don't know about you, but I need some of that. And I believe that this spiritual wisdom is maybe best expressed in two terms. I'm sure you've heard them before. Ubuntu and Namaste. Ubuntu is an ancient African proverb that says, "I am because you are." And Namaste is an ancient Sanskrit phrase that means, "The divine in me recognizes the divine in you." And those two sayings, I believe, encapsulate this truth that there really is no separation between us and the divine, that there is no separation between me and you, that we are all one in the Christ, and that Christ is all and is in all, that we are all filled with the fullness of this Christ who fills everything in every way. I pray that one day we can all wake up and know this beautiful truth that deep down in our hearts, that it would change all of us. And that message, if we really embrace it and begin to live it and live into it, really will change everything. Because the world will not change until we do. And so I end today with this blessing to all of you, Ubuntu and Namaste. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.